Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and tonight on Mages, Sages, and Seers, I am proud to bring you Frater Serpentis Satori. And it's morning. I'm sorry. I'm so used to doing night shows that I slipped up. Greetings, Satori. How are you?
All right.
So what realms of esoterica will you be opening up for us today?
I think we should talk about ancestor work and ancestor altars.
Okay.
As Halloween is around the corner.
That
and so
like
we have our thoughts on this topic spoken out and nailed down.
That sounds like a plan.
So this tends to... Well, this tends to be the time of year people that have never done it before do it. Or at least think about it.
There was a book written by Shelley Kerr called Healing Your Ancestors. And sometimes I skim through books, but this book I read every single word and I practiced every single exercise because I'm a big fan of Shelley's work on other planes, other dimensions, other ways of experiencing reality. And what I found, it was a very rough ride. And a lot of these books aren't that rough a ride, but this one was a very rough ride. And it kind of changed my whole perspective. I always thought that I had deprogrammed myself from my cultural heritage and I moved past it. But what I found was that I really didn't, and that the apple didn't fall far from the tree. And now, of course, that's obvious to me, and I advertised it a lot, but it wasn't as obvious to me before I did the ancestor work. And I started remembering information that I got and wondering if there was like an ancestral memory and how much of us is actually composed of, beyond the DNA that we got from our ancestors, but actual other threads of astrality or ethereality or soul or something that carries over from generation to generation, and how often we incarnated these families as well.
I think a whole lot of our drives and skills come from our ancestors, that a lot of cultural and tribal personality really is much deeper and darker than people give credit for in America, because we only when things are bad like they've been for the past 6 years do people openly talk about these things.
Mm-hmm.
Normally we try to all brush it under with we're all Americans, but almost all of us, including the Native Americans here in America, arrived here through some sort of historical horror. Be it the potato famine in Ireland, the whole Cyprus episode for you Greeks, the French Revolution for the French in America and Quebec. I mean, even the Puritans are in America because they got kicked out of Denmark for being troublemakers. Amsterdam. Because everybody here was running from something originally. And it hasn't really changed much.
Very good point.
And part of that is, but that's also heritage is another layer of what you're tapping into, is the heritage of our ancestors and how much that's still, how much of that is part of our unaware self, because most people are, unless you are raised in a bilingual or bicultural household, you probably didn't really think about that when you were a kid.
Yeah, it's very interesting being raised in a bicultural household. Like for instance, Greek American culture was formed like in the 40s and the 50s. And then it kind of stayed there and became an entity unto itself. But Greek culture move past it in a different direction, and American culture move past it in a different direction. So you have a choice at some point. You can stay a Greek American in your outlook. You can become more Greek in your outlook. You become more American in your outlook. You can basically develop schizophrenia, which happens when your realities are incongruent. Or you can realize that basically consensus reality is consensus pretty much, and that it has no reality beyond the reality that the people involved in agreeing that it is so have given it.
I mean, the Irish in America went through a similar thing between the 20s when the Shamrocks and modern St. Patrick's Day thing starts. But all of that was changing in the 90s because there was that fresh influx of new immigrants from Ireland again, which completely changed all of that too, because they were more about teaching Irish Gaelic and Ceilidh dancing. And there's a band called Black 47, which talks about how moving from Ireland to America, where everybody's crazy. There's that, and it is how much of your true gifts aren't really your gifts. You've inherited something that your bloodline or one of your bloodlines has always excelled at. That's particularly true in magic, because in magic there's always like, well, my grandma saw ghosts, my grandfather was a medium. That really is an area where the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. And most people who have any higher level of power pretty much know, like, it runs on this side of my family, and it's this sort of weird magical ability.
I've had stories told of ancestors. One of them actually lived during my lifetime. Unfortunately, I couldn't connect with him before he passed on. But one was on my mother's side of the family, the other one on my father's side of the family. On my father's side of the family, there was Menandros, who was said to have the evil eye. And A lot of folklore survives about him still on Lemnos, and it's made its way into folklore collections. And on my mother's side, it was Kostas, who was a wizard who operated during the Second World War. And he had many wizardly adventures with, thwarting Nazis and making sure his village was safe and got fed. And, you know, all these stories didn't make it into the folklore, but they're still being told. So I had that in immediate present. And then, of course, Greece has been around as an entity for thousands of years. So there's all these stories told of ancestors from long ago. And the names in Greek are given like you would get your grandfather's or your grandmother's name. And the names would carry on for a couple of generations. And the people who originally had the names, they'd be forgotten. So they were lumped into a category called the forgiven, you see, choremeni. And then the names and the family names continued to perpetuate themselves, pretty much the same names from generation to generation.
Yeah, a lot of esoteric groups have similar traditions. Of course, you can do that. Your middle name is the same as your grandfather's name. But when I did actually meet one of my grandfather's friends when they opened the D-Day Museum in New Orleans, I blew his mind. He's like, you are the younger version of your grandfather.
That's awesome.
That was very interesting, because then we went out and I beat them all at billiards. I'm like, yeah, of course you did. So how's the thing with the redheads going? Like, I haven't, oh, wait, never mind. It's pointless to argue with you old guys about that. But it is that thing.
And it's startling how much of it exists in us when we tend to think of ourselves as unique individuals and separate individuals. And the more you really explore, the more you find out that you're really, really not.
Right.
And that's very humbling.
It also changes how you handle your own ambitions. Hello?
I'm here.
Okay. I mean, it was very interesting for me and my Irish witch friend. Well, but she was really deep in traditional Irish Gaelic witch culture. And for her and I to be working at the most famous voodoo shops in the world, man, we were reading all these books about, like, how ancestor worship works in the African diaspora religions and in voodoo and hoodoo. And so we get in these long conversations about, because I also am familiar with Japanese Shinto and Chode, I'm able to go again, like, and again, we're in a place where voodoo and Chode are interchangeable, except it's butter and not chicken. What? If I mute the thing, you don't know if it's Chode, Huna, or Voodoo, if you can't hear the songs. See, that's interesting to me. If I don't know what language you're talking in, I have trouble knowing what ritual I'm watching.
Okay.
And in Voodoo, the way they deal with their ancestors is you use your bathroom as your conduits to the realm of the dead. And they are saying something more like the forgiving ancestors in voodoo. You're normally working with what you just called the forgiving ancestors. You're working with the ones closest to you, whose names you know, who Catholicism whitewashed into the guardian angel concept.
Okay.
Whereas in the Irish and some of the other pagan traditions, because the hearth was the center of your home, if you don't have a fireplace, you normally end up putting a weird little table near your stove that's not really counter space. Because that has always been what I've noticed from the Euro traditions, is the European traditions try to make a weird part of the spice rack or a weird little table near the stove as the ancestor altar. And sometimes you conceal it by putting all the cookbooks underneath it. Sometimes that looks like it's the cookbook nook. Sometimes you pass that off to other people as the cookbook nook.
The Greeks have the iconostasi, which sometimes is near a source of fire and sometimes it isn't. I suspect that in the old country, it was more often than not near the fireplace or near the stove. And one of the things I took from my ancestors, which I continue to perpetuate, is that every single surface is an altar. So if you look at any open surface that has divine, mythical things on it or themed around a particular holiday, And Athena observes that too. She rearranges the altars periodically, so there's like movement, and they express different things at different times. But there's a whole cast of characters sharing our reality with us, and it honors that tradition.
Well, there's another kind of ancestor that we've been talking around. Because the realm of shadow contains everybody who has ever lived in this world, sometimes you start to receive contact from a famous or historical dead person. And this at the time was an issue about, like, when I had to explain ancestor worship at the voodoo shop, because I had lots of friends in college who were music majors. They all had like those little mini busts of Mozart or Beethoven.
Yeah.
And didn't know that was ancestor worship. Didn't know that was how elite white America sublimated ancestor worship. And when I started working at the voodoo shop, that became even more clear to me. But the same idea is that someone famous and historical and dead may come to talk to you because they feel their work is unfinished.
Right.
Or that their work is being forgotten or something along those lines. Or you're learning guitar and you want to talk to Jimi Hendrix more. You know, there's that too.
Yeah, these are the honored dead, and they fulfilled the role that heroes did in Days of Yore or Saints.
Right. But that never completely went away. We just pretend we don't notice it in America.
Yeah, and we have, besides the little busts, we have posters, we have reproductions of paintings. There's all sorts of things that you can get that will honor someone who's passed and enshrine their memory and honor all that they've given to us.
But the little busts are a continuity with the ancient Roman tradition of the ancestor hall.
Mm-hmm.
That's a Roman tradition that also never quite went away.
Why do you think in this country the context for all of these customs and traditions is obscured or not easy to discern?
Because Christianity thinks everything it doesn't understand is Satanism. If you're not Christian, you're a Satanist. And because they live in that binary reality, anything that you can't explain to a 6-year-old is considered Satanism. Says the guy who used to work at the voodoo shop. My old voodoo shop answer to that. But no, that's why I think it completely is that in the same way, I mean, the Hocus Pocus sequel has been dealing with this week.
I haven't had a chance.
The Hocus Pocus sequel has been accused of being satanic.
Really?
And yeah, there's a whole little skit about it on Saturday Night Live last night. Because people fear what they don't understand, and Christianity chooses not to understand anything at all. So all of this becomes sublimated, and only people that break away from that realize what they're doing. Like why almost every classical musician has one of those little busts of one of those guys hanging out near their computer or hanging out near where they practice. And a lot of people who come through being an English major or an actor, they have a couple of those laying around too. It's completely normal in the arts. And not that unknown in politics because the whole Founding Fathers, John Locke, all that stuff.
My introduction to the Afro-Caribbean spirituality and magic was we have cousins who were Greek and Cuban, and they practiced a strange Christianity. And since we were Greek and we practiced a strange Christianity compared to what most people practiced, it was okay that everybody had their own, you know, cultural Christianity. But some of the traditions I later recognized as Afro-Caribbean. But I, again, at the time I was a kid, and this is what they did, and it was different than what we did, but we got together to celebrate the holidays anyway. Later on in, I believe, my 20s, I worked in a rehabilitation company that helped people who'd been injured, that needed physical therapy or lawyers or medical care. You know, I was part of the process of determining what they needed and helping them get it. At the time, I was exploring the Hyperborean mysteries or the Norse mysteries, as they're sometimes called. So I had a Thor's hammer around my neck with red and white beads, which are Thor's colors. And I was sent to somebody who was having a difficult time with the rehabilitation company. And they would always send me to people that people had difficulty with. So when I knocked on the door. As she opened the door, she said, "Oh, thank you, Chango." So I didn't know at the time who Chango was, but she explained to me that she had prayed to Chango, that she followed Santeria, and I came. And Chango has an instrument that's very much like a hammer, like Thor's hammer, or at least the version right. that I was wearing. And then red and white are also Chango's colors. And she told me that Chango in Christianity, in Catholicism, was Saint Barbara. Because again, St. Barbara is red and white, her colors, and she carries a sword and holds a castle, and Chango is the king and a warrior. And so I got to learn a little bit through her, and then I pursued this on my own. But we had similar customs in Greek, where a lot of the saints were actually ancient Greek figures, nature spirits, heroes, kings. They got translated into saints. And because during the rise of Christianity, Hercules's sect was very concerned with health spas and gymnasiums, and it rivaled the cult of Asclepius in healing centers, Hercules became Saint Luke the physician. So I was used to saints being other people, so I was able to process the information that I was given. And in fact, you and I met over 20 years ago. And connected over a conversation in a Greek
that is exactly
forum.
This. That is exactly that. Initiation is initiation, and what the Reconstructionists were having a problem with is you say something about, but it's the same in the African Dysphoria stuff,
right?
And then I agree with you and out myself as someone who worked at Reverend Zombies. Much to the shock and horror of the Reconstructionists, who are as freaked out that I agree that the Egyptian gods aren't these static things we burn candles to,
mm-hmm.
as they are about the fact that I'm a child of Akate who practices voodoo. So you and I leave that room pretty quickly.
Yeah, I tried my best to initiate dialogue with them, and I really gave it my all, but it just seemed, after one too many calendar debates.
See, that's why we had to explain that to this audience. We had to explain to the audience all of the stuff about calendar stupid, because by the time I got to New Orleans, there were enough people who had dropped out of those organizations and came to New Orleans. And we realized, like, almost all of us had been dues-paying members, and a bunch of us had been on different rival calendar committees. And because the smarter kids in that group all had worked at the voodoo shops, because if you really knew your stuff, you worked at the voodoo shops. So that becomes a unifying factor of the voodoo shops at the time just cared that you were experienced and knowledgeable about the magical arts. They didn't care what tradition your origin was.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't care that I was a Crowleyan hermetic when they hired me. And after I'm there for a week, they're like, "Do you have a group or something? Can we hire all? How many apprentices do you have?" Right, but I mean, then that bubbles up there and down there. It's the same conversation. The conversation is, I don't understand why the Egyptian people are fighting with the voodoo people. You're fighting with them over the fact that they kill chickens? Come on, guys.
Yeah, when I was growing up in New York City, Greeks, they would raise the Paschal lamb because that was a very old tradition.
Right.
And then, you know, they would kill the lamb for Easter. And they used to get in trouble with the ASPCA all the time. And they didn't understand because it's something they've been doing for a couple of thousand years. And it's a holiday that everybody recognizes. And yet, you know, by performing that tradition here, they would get fines and they would get arrested. And I remember every Easter, somebody my family knew would get arrested for sacrificing a Paschal lamb at Easter.
Well, let's use that as a segue into the dark truth about your jack-o'-lantern.
Okay.
The ancient Celtic warriors used to keep the heads of their enemies, which we have lots and lots and lots of proof about. It was very much like Game of Thrones, and there's also the story of the original Bran after he's beheaded, talking and doing magic, even though he's been dead for a bit.
Right. Every culture has a disembodied head, you know, Bran the Blessed and many others, the John the Baptist had magical properties.
So on some level, the jack-o'-lantern sitting on your doorstep is a sort of sublimated decapitation that you're using to scare off evil things. Because we're using it to scare away the ghosts and goblins. It's a very ancient form of Celtic protection magic. But we don't know how much because Caesar gives Celtic religion like two paragraphs in his book.
Right.
If Caesar had actually well, that's the whole problem. And because Cleopatra never went to Ireland. If we had a better Roman source that covered more of Celtic religion, we would know how little Celtic religion ever changed. But the dark truth about the jack-o'-lantern is on some level, it is you sacrificing yourself from the old year into the new year, because Samhain not only is an ancestor festival, it's also New Year's.
Mm-hmm.
So on some level, the dark secret of your jack-o'-lantern is you are literally sacrificing last year's self. And people don't want to think about that either, even though we're perfectly fine with the whole Charlie Brown version of it all. Without thinking about where that comes from. Well, the ghosts are the shades. The ghosts are that this is the time of year, if you have Celtic blood, whoever it is in your ancestors who you got your power from comes to check up on what you're doing with their power. Comes to check up and see what of the things they wanted to do that they weren't able to do, you're still doing. Which is always interesting because I was joking with one of my friends about how the fact that my cookbooks always start falling off the shelves, and at one point one of the cookbooks fell off and the cat is on the other side of the apartment. So the cat is like, wasn't me. Like, no, Kitty, I know it wasn't you. I know who it was. And I know why Mom is trying to read the plant-based cookbook, because I don't think she understands what that means.
Halloween is
like
my favorite
flipping,
holiday.
It's always been my favorite holiday.
Mine too, and it's my wedding anniversary too. Athena and I got married on Halloween, and it's also the day of the wedding of the Dagda with the Morrigan. And I'm Greek by descent. Athena's a Celt by descent. So the Dagda is Hercules, and the Morrigan is Athena in some of their Celtic goddesses. They have other appearances in the Celtic pantheon as well. And that's the time when the veil is thinnest between the worlds, between the realms of light and the realms of darkness, between the past and the future. So it's a very magical time.
Yeah. And it's just so amusing that a lot of this, when we made it safe for people, when we made it so 6-year-olds could understand, it became what it became.
I believe it's the second most popular holiday currently.
Yeah, it always has been, but some of that actually has to do with Martha Stewart upselling Halloween. The combination of Martha Stewart and Buffy happening simultaneously built up Halloween among Gen X, and it never really went away. And I guess the buildup of Martha Stewart ultimately led to this new thing about calling it spooky season all month long. Which one of my former coworkers from the voodoo shop is like, how do we, as people who work there, feel about this? Like, it means we get to start on the first of the month. It means it's all month long, not just 10 days. You used to worry because my New Orleans clique used to carve our pumpkins like when the sun goes into Scorpio.
Okay.
So our pumpkins were done, and so everybody else could be like, da 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 da, your pumpkin. I'm like, no, as soon as it's at the grocery store, I do it to get it over with. I need to move forward this year.
So,
and I've been telling all of my friends. What?
Go ahead.
Well, I mean, that's literally right at the beginning of the month, and now that we call this whole month spooky season because television stations like to do 30 days of Halloween movies, Geico Spooktacular, and do all that stuff. Those of us that actually practice are like, no, actually, this is more probably how it was in Ireland before the Tudors took over and tried to change things. This probably is how it always was in Ireland. Especially if you argue about whether Halloween itself is the beginning or the end of the festival.
Because
there's always that argument with the cross-quarter days about whether the fixed date we use, whether or not these holidays are calculated by lunar. See, and here we go with Irish calendar arguments.
Yes.
Is Halloween the end of the festival or the beginning? Is it connected to new moon or full moon? Were the ancient Celts on a lunar calendar, but we didn't write anything down, so we don't know? Like, well, if we just assume, you know which stone is Stonehenge tells you it's spooky season.
Well, I, with the whole, my response to the calendar arguments a long time ago, before I exited, was... that I made holidays out of the birthdays of the Yahoo group members. And I don't know if you remember that.
I remember that.
And people designed, you know, if they had a holiday, what would it be called? And it was their birthday, but this way. And then after that, I declared every day a holiday. You know, if you observe the planetary powers, then every day is a holy day. So, you know, why not just go with that?
Or if you have a congressional calendar. Or if you have an American congressional calendar where we have National Pie Day and National Bunny Day, National Cider Day. I mean, you can even do that with laws are in our Congress has passed that make pretty much every day a holiday.
So why not celebrate every day, celebrate every single moment of every day? I mean, you know, life is special, life is short, so why not enjoy and celebrate each and every moment?
Exactly.
I find that a lot of holidays, too, like Halloween, have mythic import, and they tell a tale within a tale, recently, I've been using the Lionsgate portal, and coincidentally lined up with a lot of Herculean mythic lore, the dates and the festivals and the holidays from antiquity and throughout time. So I constructed a myth around a certain period of time, and it even included my name day and all sorts of things. It all fit together really, really well. So I started observing that. That was my first new holiday construct in very many years. But I'm going to have more, too. I want to find new ways of celebrating the wonder of life. So what parts of your old self are you shedding this year?
I actually cut my hair a few months ago. And it's interesting because the people who used to be professional fortune tellers in New Orleans, one of my fortune telling friends asks me, why did I cut my hair? But I haven't done it yet. So since it came from that particular person, I then cut my hair within 48 hours. And then it starts going around my circle in New Orleans. And I guess the truth now is, that we were cutting our hair in respect of what's going on in Iran, even though it didn't happen yet. And I'm also trying to figure out refocusing myself on the goals within Hercules Invictus and get out of the weird stagnation I was in during COVID.
That's a lot to focus on.
And coming to better accept what Thor needs me to do.
Yes, Thor has been very busy lately and very much around everybody. Including the movies, Thor Love and Thunder.
I actually like that movie, but...
Hi. Did you see the cutscenes? There was a cutscene.
I haven't gone through any of that yet. No, you've been telling me about that, but I haven't taken the time to go through those yet.
Okay, so I won't spoil the surprise when you get.
No,
there.
You already told me that one.
Okay, so I spoiled the surprise. Sorry. I cut my hair. It's ancient Herculean custom to cut your hair during certain times. I cut my hair to mark major transitions in my life, and otherwise I just let it get long. And the last major transition I had was becoming a grandfather over a year ago. So a little over a year ago I cut my hair, and now it's been growing back since then. And basically I have various points during the year where I kind of turn a new page or start a new chapter. And I'm going to be focusing more and more on the things that are totally important to me and less on the things that aren't. Because again, I as I get older, I appreciate the fragility of life and its ephemeralness. And I like being here and now, and I'm enjoying this incarnation a great deal, not every minute of it, but generally. I just want to enjoy the time that I'm here, however long it is, and to manifest as many of the things that I have inside me to bring forth and see what happens with them.
That's a good, well, but I mean, that's treating Halloween as Irish New Year's and using it for your New Year's goals.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the last time most of the people in that circle cut our hair was because COVID was already around, but we didn't know it yet because it was already going around in China and we would later find that out. But the same friend who asked me if I cut my hair before I did it calls me and she's like, I'm going to cut my hair on my birthday. You should probably do the same.
Okay.
Well, no. Last time we can pay for a haircut in almost 3 years. You can't get a haircut come that December. You do it in November. By January, you can't do that. We can do it in the middle of November. And everybody wonders what's up because she, just like you, she and I both chopped our hair off and everybody's like, what's going on? Why did you two do that? What's going on? You'll see. We can't talk because we're afraid we'll alter the future, even though we're not sure how often that really happens. Now, anyway.
Any interesting synchronicities lately?
Not as far as that goes, but everyone in that circle realized, like, when we cut our hair, because normally we do it in May on Walpurgisnacht every 3 or 5 years. And we did it at the wrong time of year right before COVID. And so 3 years from last time was right before COVID a month ago. And then shortly thereafter, everything happens in Iran with women throwing up, burning their hijabs and cutting their hair. So we did it in yay Iranian resistance next week. Yay, go girls, when that happens next week. Yeah. Because that was what she was confused about. She was confused about cause and effect. And now that it's been a few weeks, I'm like, the cause and effect is all the women in Iran are cutting their hair. So you and I did it because there needs to be someone who lights the fuse. And you wonder why I light the fuse. And I'm like, but why? I hate this paradox when you put me in it. Why did you do something you haven't done yet? Because I haven't done it yet. Huh? But whenever she and I do that, we do that, and I had to explain to her later. I'm like, yeah, I had to do it to be the first one in the group to do it. And you had to wonder why I did it, because you're having that malfunction where you're 3 days ahead of me, where you're seeing things I've done 3 days before I've done them again. So you think I've already done it.
Yeah,
but again, that's part that's again her inherited power. Her inherited power is that happens occasionally. It happens most often with me and another friend of ours who are children of Hecate, because time around us moves funny anyway. So a child of the Morrigan occasionally seeing glimpses of a child of Hecate's future doesn't know if what they're seeing is really the future or if it's the past. So occasionally you do have to have a phone call about, like, that's a strange candle to be burning. Why did you put those three goddesses on the altar together? Wait, which three goddesses? explain what I don't think I'm understanding. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just asking for clarification about what you think I'm going to do.
Mm-hmm. And those three goddesses are still very much in the forefront of what's going on.
Yeah, and it all started because I think she saw your altar, wondered what that was, and then puts the same wheel in motion by confounding the past and the future. Because she treats that ritual as though it's something that's out of the box, as something that has probably been in one of my notebooks, like all of my other weird mixing and matching Greek god festivals that I do throughout the year anyway.
Mm-hmm.
She just assumed that that was something that was in the box anyway and didn't realize that it was in the box because I had just bought a new Hecate with a torch.
And coincidentally, we got a Hecate with a torch over here, a bronze-colored Hecate with a torch.
Yeah, so is mine.
Yeah,
and
that
so
was,
me cutting open that box is what led to her vision of a ritual that hasn't happened yet. But when I put those three on the same altar with different color-coded candles, I see what the ritual is supposed to do. And she doesn't have to apologize for that. I just have to then turn around and explain to her cause and effect from my perspective. Because as a child of Hecate, she clearly sees me moving through time. So sometimes she does skip to the end of the base, skip to the end of the season, ask me a question about the season finale when I'm like, what happens at the season finale? Why did I do that? But that's just a natural malfunction because of the way our superpowers work.
Mm-hmm.
It happens enough that neither of us are even annoyed with each other about it. She's just confused. And usually when she calls me on those things, I'm like, oh, what you don't understand is this, this, and this. Because I didn't explain it to you because I didn't want to bore you. Because 80% of the time, it's just that I didn't fill you in on what I'm doing in the world of politics, or that I'm working on this kind of talisman because I'm trying to understand something about angels and talismans. Most of the time when I've had those conversations with her, she really has been like, why are you doing that? That's weird. But like every once in a while, she rolls a 20 and I'm like, wait, why do I do what? Why did I do what?
Well, it's an interesting way of getting instruction in terms of possibilities to explore or inevitabilities to meet.
Yeah, that's a very interesting anomaly of Isis's power. that every once in a while she asks you why you've done things you haven't done yet. I don't understand your motivation in that scene, because that scene's 3 days in the future. Wait. What am I going to do?
And as with the prophecies in myth, they wind up happening regardless of whether you want them to happen or you don't want them to happen. Sometimes the things that you try to prevent something from happening are the very things that make it happen.
Yeah, well, my more rationalist friends tried to have that conversation with me about the haircut. I'm like, no, it's the base in the Matrix. Because she's seen it, it's already happened. But by telling me about it, she makes it happen. So she's seen it, it's already happened, but she asked me about it, so it's going to happen. Because there are things that don't happen if it doesn't happen. And whatever needs to happen because that happens, needs to happen because that happens. The answer to why she didn't understand why I did it is because she makes me do it by asking me why I did it. Because the only way out of the paradox for both of us is to cut our hair.
You had brought up earlier in our conversation today the fact that once you learn the language, and that is something, like I enjoy talking to magicians and hermeticists and practitioners of one or another ethnic path, because the challenge is in learning the language and what they're communicating with what they're saying. And just as I did with the cosmic philosophies to a degree, and earlier than that to the different paganisms in New Jersey and elsewhere, I want to start doing with the magicians too, because it is like the Curse of Babel or the Tower of Babel, where everybody's just speaking the same language initially, and then it gets broken down into other languages and people aren't, they're saying the same things, but they're not recognizing that they're saying the same things. And I'm going to be initiating forums very soon. So I'd like to invite you to participate if you'd like. And also Brandy Williams, she is starting a show called Witchcraft and Theurgy, in which she's going to be focusing on how theurgic practice from antiquity survives in what today is being called witchcraft, or not so much Wicca, because Wicca and witchcraft are starting to diverge paths. In fact,
they've been diverging for 20 years.
Yeah.
You're just so much on the outside, you don't realize Buffy ended that argument.
Okay.
When Willow says, I'm not a Wiccan, I'm a witch, that's it. It's over. Go home. You Wiccans, go home. What? No. Right. That's the moment it happened in our popular culture. When Willow says that in Buffy. At that point when she's going evil. But most of the witches in my life are like, but Buffy answered that already. Like, yeah, see? Uh-huh. If you were there, Buffy answered that for us.
Yeah, popular
they've been diverging. Well, they have always been diverged. It's just that because Wicca controlled the sources of information, Wicca got to say the witches are the ones that are on the outside, unless you lived in a city where there were lots of witches, in which case the witches got to be like, that's because they have Llewellyn. They have Llewellyn, so they think they're the majority. Because in New Orleans, there was never any doubt, because that's one of the first, because that's the thing about, like, wearing a pentacle. Wearing a pentacle means you're a Wiccan, which means there are certain things I can't talk to you about, because you're a Wiccan. Used to believe all those things. Hello?
In Greece, I'm here. In Greece, witches are supernatural beings that are not human. They're demi-human, like centaurs and satyrs. The witches have one or two like donkey legs instead of goat legs or horse, like the bottom part or deer or whatever. And they usually dance in threes on lonely mountaintops. And there are wise men and wise women who have the old herbal lore and the magical lore, usually to prevent the evil eye or magical type of ailments. Then there's Magi, who study some form of ceremonial magic or hermeticism. They don't really have the same concept of witches. The strigles, which is what the supernatural witches are called, the Italians still call them strega, but they're very human in the Italian system.
Right.
So there never was a blending of Wicca with witchcraft in Greece, I guess, unless it's in the urban centers.
There never really was a blending of Wicca with witchcraft because the only places that happened were places where people could not get any other information. In places where there were established ethnic witchcraft groups, cultural witchcraft groups, which are really the traditional witchcraft groups, Wicca again ends up a suburban thing. Because in the suburbs, there are no ethnic witches. It was never that way. It only looks that way to people who are on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
Wicca was always marginalized, but Wicca off and on tries to think like it is paganism. And then the whole reaction to Wicca is what leads to Reconstructionism. Almost everybody in the beginning phases of Reconstructionists had left Wicca.
Right.
And were unaware of the cultural traditions they were whitewashing by trying to create Reconstructionism. Which is why we left those rooms. And why so many of the other smart people who left those rooms ended up my buddies in New Orleans, because they found out that everybody who did it and didn't talk about it was in New Orleans. And in New Orleans, because everything was all mixed together, you're just called a practitioner. You're just
right.
A practitioner. You're a practitioner of mostly Italian flavor. You're a practitioner of mostly Celtic flavor. You're a practitioner who's voodoo and Catholic. Because in New Orleans, that both is more realistic about how the world of magic really works, which is why both Wiccans and evangelical Christians were very quickly confused in that world, because they all think that they come from the majoritarian point of view. And those are all points of view that people who are real practitioners are like, been there, done that, go away. Move along. Go to Texas or something. Go to Texas.
Well, I know in Greek Christianity, the saints on their saint days, some of them get up and walk around, you know, so they have the saints' mummified remains dressed in clerical vestments. I remember with Saint Spiridon, I believe it was, they had to change his shoes every year, and they would show that the shoes that they gave him the year before were worn, because he would get up and wander around. So again, very different than what most people think Christianity is.
Yeah, but that's also the issue about, like, you until recently still thought there was still controversy between Wicca and witchcraft, and that controversy got kicked up again because of the whole thing on TikTok. Because again, it's misinformation being spread by people who spread misinformation. If you haven't done your homework and you're playing telephone with magic, you are playing telephone with magic. Go read a book.
I'm not on TikTok, so I'm totally out of that.
No, but I mean, part of why this spiked again was right before COVID, this whole thing spiked again because of misinformation on TikTok about witchcraft. And as I delved into that, I found out about all the misinformation in TikTok about conspiracy theories and all of how that connects to other issues.
Mm-hmm.
But no, that the issue between witchcraft and Wicca was handled a long time ago. It's just that a lot of Wiccans refuse to accept facts. But they're not the only people in America that refuse to accept facts.
Right. But they did have a very plug-and-play type of spirituality in that they would mix and match from different pantheons and make correspondences that were quite unique. Again, it was very homogenous. I don't know if that's the right word.
That ends up being the problem.
It opens the door because it ends up, but only
because information about magic and witchcraft is so heavily controlled at that point, because most people don't have access to facts that now you can learn on YouTube and with a 2-minute search, because that information was not available in the 70s and 80s. Wicca became what it became because of information control.
I'm here. I'm pondering what you said. And I looked at the clock while I was pondering, and I believe we have less than 3 minutes left. What would you like to close today's conversation with? What thoughts would you like people to think about till our next conversation?
I would like them to think about setting up an ancestor altar and all of the things we've been talking about unwhitewashing and unhomogenizing, and thinking about what would your grandmother or grandfather do in America today? How would they solve all of our current weird problems?
Go ahead.
Like my spirit who visits me this time of year, who I get my power from, I explain to her the whole issue about building the system for Hercules Invictus. And because all of those books are so completely different from what they were in 1968, because the reading list has completely changed in the first year of witchcraft, she would have to read all the books. All of those books did not exist in 1968. They're all fairly new books that have all been printed in the past 5 years or so. So it's going to be interesting to me to deal with my ancestors' perspective on, even if it's just the witchcraft unit, even if that's all we're able to do before she takes off again on Christmas. That's interesting because all of these books are new. And trying to even explain to her blood and bones was fascinating, because blood and bones gets into all of the gross, bloody part of witchcraft. And it's in a book now. A book you can buy from Llewellyn that's pretty much everywhere. But even in the 90s in New Orleans, most of the stuff in that book was stuff you only talked about with people you knew who did it anyway.
And
part of why that Irish witch and I became, well, part of why she and I became friends is because we did it anyway.
And on that note, we need to wrap up. We only have a few seconds left. Satori, thank you. Always a pleasure to be speaking with you, both on and off the air. And I look forward to our next conversation. Thanks to everybody who's listening, whether you clicked on a link and found yourself here, whether you called in and you're waiting in our queue, or whether you're going to check us out later on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. Thanks again, Satori.